Welcome to the Animal Voices radio show here on 102.7 FM Co-op Radio, CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, February 3rd, 2012. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here today by my co-host, Alyssa Ray, our guest co-host, Robin Piquel, and our control room tech trainee, Morgan Ahoff. Welcome, everyone.
Hello.
Hi.
Animal Voices is Vancouver's and Western Canada's only animal advocacy and vegan radio program, bringing you all the animal and vegan-related news, events, interviews, lifestyle, and commentary you need to keep up to date on what's happening both locally and internationally. We at Animal Voices encourage the movement towards a world in which animals are treated with compassion and mercy and are afforded the same rights that humans take for granted. This program can be heard every Friday from noon till 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and is also streamed live at coopradio.org and available as podcasts on iTunes and animalvoices.org after airing. For our first interview today, we have Glenn Gates on the show. Glenn is a local Vancouver animal activist who we've had on the program before, and today he is here to speak with us about the upcoming Vancouver Animal Advocacy Camp, which is an exciting two-day event coming up on February 25th and 26th this month. The Animal Advocacy Camp is an unconference where people from anywhere who wish to help animals are invited to attend to network and join together for a weekend of learning and about taking valuable, effective action for animals. The idea is that we as animal advocates have valuable skills, experiences, and ideas, and that by working and learning together, we can build a stronger community of animal advocates and make a greater difference in the lives of animals. I did attend and help with some of the planning of the last animal advocacy camp, which was held 2 years ago and was also the first one that we had. And it was truly a fruitful and impactful event for all those who attended, I think. For all these like-minded animal advocates from the city to come out of the woodwork and join together on this one day to meet each other, share ideas, and network together was a unique opportunity that will now be recreated in the camp happening later this month. Did you go last time, Alyssa? I don't remember. No.
Nope.
But you will be this year, right?
Yep.
It's definitely an event not to miss. And the only thing that would actually stop me from attending this year would be if I was, say, out of the country. And actually, that will be the case during this year's event, which brings us to our feature interview on vegan traveling. Carolyn Scott Hamilton, who has branded herself as the Healthy Voyager, will be here with us today to give us tips and advice for compassionate eating while traveling. Carolyn is an avid traveler and circulates the globe with a passion for discovering delicious vegan food while on her adventures. She is also the executive producer, creator, host, and writer of the Healthy Voyager web series and radio show, website, blog, brand, and social network. I'm looking forward to speaking with Carolyn about her experiences of vegan traveling and to maybe get some tips as well that will help Morgan and I in the next few weeks as we embark upon an adventuresome journey to India. And if Carolyn's name sounds familiar, maybe that's because you heard my review of her cookbook on the show last week, The Healthy Voyager's Global Kitchen, 150 plant-based recipes from around the world. I invited you, our listeners, to enter our contest giveaway to win a copy of this book, and we are going to do the draw for the book now. So the winner of The Healthy Voyager's Global Kitchen is, let's see here, Lisa D'Angelo. Congratulations, Lisa. Lisa happens to be a friend of mine, too. So I will let you know shortly how you can pick up your book, or I can meet up with you probably. And Lisa's answer to what her favorite plant-based ethnic dish was moussaka. So that would be from Greece?
I don't even know what moussaka is.
It's a lovely eggplant casserole. Delicious. Traditionally made with Parmesan, but doesn't have to be. So, on the subject of vegan traveling, let me tell you about the trip that Morgan and I will be taking next week. Can you believe it's next week?
It's hard to believe. Yeah.
We signed up for this, what, like 8 months ago or something?
Mm-hmm.
When it was
in the summertime.
It barely seemed like it would ever happen. In just 6 days, we'll be embarking on Veg News Magazine's annual Great Adventure to India. This is a trip that Veg News Magazine has been hosting every year for the last 3 years in conjunction with the vegetarian travel company Veg Voyages. And I've been wanting to go every year since it started. And finally, this year, that wish is turning into a reality. So this is what we'll be experiencing on our vegan tour of India. It's a 12-day tour starting in New Delhi and then moving to Agra, where the Taj Mahal is, and then going south and southwest through the province of Rajasthan. That's at least how I've been describing it to people. Is that what you're telling people? Because everyone's asking me, where are you going? I'm like, well, do you know India? Because I sure didn't until people started asking me and I had to look this up. What are you telling people?
I've been telling people it's a little butterfly-shaped tour around Delhi.
Butterfly-shaped. Well, I think it's actually a known triangle tour that goes like that. Like, here I am drawing a triangle. Butterfly, though, that's very in line with the theme of our show.
It's actually very much an infinity symbol, because we go through Delhi twice, right in the middle. So.
Through the middle? I don't know, but we take an overnight train back. But anyways.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. So we will be fed 3 vegan meals a day, which is awesome. We'll be taking part in a vegan cooking class, volunteering at Animal Aid Sanctuary, which is a local animal rescue organization in India. I'm really looking forward to that. And we'll be touring all the sites to see in the areas with 27 other like-minded people. I am especially looking forward to the 3 vegan meals a day, all Indian meals. Obviously, I don't think we'll be having pizza or anything on our trip. I'm just wondering. I love Indian food, and it's going to be northern and southern Indian food, a mix, right?
But I hear they have McDonald's over there.
Oh, maybe we'll be making a stop in at McDonald's. Oh. You hear they have don't they have McDonald's everywhere?
Yeah, no, but they have like special Indian
McDonald's
flavors and things. So, yeah, we should totally.
Hamburgers without beef, because they do not consume the beef there. At least I would presume. But
we should at least get a photo of the menu while we're there.
Definitely.
I think that'll be interesting.
Yeah, I think that's what you're looking forward to, is taking all kinds of crazy pictures, right? I don't know
Absolutely.
If you looked at the pictures from the last couple of years of the tours that are on Facebook, but they actually have one album that is it's just signs. Did you see that? Some of the signs are pretty
yes.
wacky.
Yeah.
So, anyways, three vegan meals a day. I'm really looking forward to that, because that's why I haven't been eating all month, so that I can eat during our trip and just enjoy the food. So apparently vegetarian eating in India is easy. From what I remember reading before, that it's the nation is 30% vegetarian. Like, that is their
That's
population's
amazing.
30%. In comparison, in Canada or BC, we're only about 5%, or maybe a bit more in BC. But India is certainly not vegan. In fact, we've been told that they don't even really know what that word means, right? Because they are very lacto-vegetarian. They do a lot of dairy. Mm-hmm. Everything has dairy in it. So, but on our tour, it'll all be specially prepared with vegans in mind. What are you most looking forward to on the trip, Morgan?
Well, definitely the photography. And actually, I'm looking forward to going 100% vegan. That's something I haven't tried for an extended period of time. Yeah, so.
Because you have a protein issue, but I'm sure we'll be getting a lot of protein. Like, it just seems like a lot of food. Well, there's like lentils and legumes and all types. Like, everything has protein in it. But the fact that it seems like we'll be just eating a lot, like, you'll be getting, as long as you get enough calories and you have a balanced diet, you get enough protein. So
I don't think that'll be a problem.
Yeah, I am looking forward to that. So if anyone's curious about this trip, there you can find the whole itinerary and more at vegnews.com/India, and of course I'll also be reporting all about it when we get back in about 3 weeks or so. So we've got our upcoming events now. On Tuesday, February the 7th, 2012, that's next week at 5:30 p.m., Veg Meetup Vancouver is hosting a raw vegan dinner at the New Organic Lives Granville Cafe. Have you heard of this new cafe, Alyssa?
I work actually right across from the cafe.
So you have heard of it. Have you been there?
I have been there, yes.
Awesome. So it's at 451 Granville Street at West Hastings in Vancouver, BC. This might be one that actually you might be able to go to. Who knows? It's at 5:30. So Organic Lives has opened a new location downtown. They're an all-raw restaurant and all-organic, too, I think. And this is a good opportunity to check it out on this meetup. There's no preset menu at this event. You just order and pay for what you want. And you can share if you want with other people that are going. Organic Lives, as I said, offers delicious raw vegan food and drink. It's one of my favorite places in the city to eat. They will, so the people going will be grabbing food and then going to a place nearby to sit and eat. Menu items include pizza and Caesar salad, Sicilian wrap, pad thai, sprouted pecan sushi, Hunza Valley granola, and a range of smoothies and elixirs, and they have the most amazing desserts there. To RSVP, go to meetup.com/vegvan. On Saturday, February the 11th at 8 p.m., Carmivore the Vegan Store is hosting a Valentine's Day Mingler. This is happening at the Carmivore Store at 610 Columbia Street in New Westminster. I was actually just there last weekend. Valentine's Day is coming up, and what better way of expressing love for yourself and the planet than by spending time learning some new and healthy food tips for life. For $15, you will spend the evening making new friends, learning about delicious, healthy vegan foods, and will have the added benefit of in-store discounts. So the ticket price includes food demos, a sound healing session, which sounds intriguing, kombucha, raw cheese, and cracker samplers, and a variety of hors d'oeuvres, plus organic hot chocolate with marshmallows, vegan marshmallows, of course, and a 10% discount on everything in the store. Space is limited for this event, so email humbleroots.wellness@gmail.com to reserve your spot, or you can also buy tickets at talk.carmivore.ca. On Saturday and Sunday, February 25th and 26th, from 9 a.m. till 5 p.m., Vancouver's Animal Advocacy Camp is happening. This is happening at The Hive at 128 West Hastings Street in Vancouver. So the Animal Advocacy Camp is back this year. The event is being expanded to 2 full days of speakers and open space style discussions, which we'll be learning more about soon. Join your fellow activists for 2 days of learning about taking effective action for animals. You all have valuable skills, experiences, and ideas, and by working and learning together, you can build a stronger community of animal advocates and make a greater difference in the lives of animals. Animal Advocacy Camp will be a practical attendee-led event where you get to set the agenda and host discussions about what you want to talk about. You can share your stories, ideas, and experiences, learn from the experiences of others, discover the wealth of resources available, host powerful dialogues about issues and strategies, create and strengthen relationships, and become a stronger and more effective advocate for animals. Advanced registration is required and costs $15 for both days, so register now by going to http://aac2012.eventbrite.ca. Once again, that's aac2012.eventbrite.ca, and Bright is spelled B-R-I-T-E. For more information on this exciting event, you can visit animaladvocacycamp.ca. And as I said, we'll be chatting about this event very soon. If you have an animal-friendly event that you would like to have announced on the show, please email us the details at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, or you can post it on our Facebook page, which is Animal Voices Vancouver.
Better Days. It's a folk roots radio program that brings you music from around the world, with a particular nod to songwriters whose work deserves a wider listen. It's music for your minds and hearts, from communities, not for the charts. Join us Thursdays, 10 to midnight, right here, CFRO 102.7 FM, and online, coopradio.org.
Better days, they've been too long gone. But I swear they're out there, they'll be coming up some sweet dawn. Better days coming back around. You just keep on clinging to whatever faith you found.
You are listening to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 102.7 FM, CFRO, Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
Today's first interview is with local Vancouver animal activist Glenn Gates, who is with us to tell us all about the upcoming Animal Advocacy Camp, Vancouver's Animal Rights Unconference, in 10 minutes or less. This two-day event will be happening this year on February 25th and 26th. It's a time for Lower Mainland animal advocates to meet together for a weekend of learning about taking effective action for animals. Hello, Glenn, and welcome again to the Animal Voices Radio Show.
Hey, Allison, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so you are the key organizer of this volunteer-led event in Vancouver, and this is going to be the second animal advocacy camp happening. The first one was held in 2010, which drew about 90 participants and was a great success, I think. So to start, who is the event for, and what is the purpose of it and the intended outcomes of the event?
Well, really, the event is for anyone in the area or even outside of the area who's working for animal rights and animal protection. That includes, you know, vegan activists, food activists, and, you know, sort of the normal animal rights activists. The idea behind the event is to bring our community together, you know, so we can network, learn from each other, coordinate and plan, you know, create new ideas. And really, you know, everyone's invited to leave their expectations at the door and open themselves up to unexpected experiences, unexpected ideas, and unexpected outcomes, because that's really when the exciting work happens.
Yeah, I was really impressed with the first one that we held, and I don't know if you feel the same way, but because I didn't really know what to expect. I think you had that feeling too, right? Because you just sort of started it from scratch. I know you had a basic structure to draw from to establish the event, but not so much in the animal advocacy area. So what was your experience like just from last event? For me, I just felt that networking with animal advocates from all over the city and meeting people that I didn't even know, surprise, surprise, like you think you know everyone because it's a really small community, but just to bring all these people from all over was just a really inspiring experience for that day. How did you feel about that?
Yeah, it was really exciting to see everyone come together.
Yeah.
Because you get a whole spectrum of activists together in a room, and like, new ideas pop up. You know, people have ideas for a campaign, and they'll find someone else who is interested in the same kind of idea that they hadn't met before. And then all of a sudden, maybe they'll start a group, maybe they'll start an event, maybe they'll do a campaign of their own.
So I guess you could say that might be an expected or unexpected outcome of the event. Is just really it's the networking and finding people who might be willing or able to work on stuff that you want to collaborate on together. So, which is what I found when I was there. Can you tell us about what this year's Animal Advocacy Camp has in store for us and explain to us what exactly an unconference is and what is and what this non-traditional format entails?
Yeah, well, it's an exciting format. It's a semi-standard format, but it's really open. So we have a speaker at the beginning and the end of each day. But then the rest of the day, there's three other breakout session periods when and that agenda will be set at the beginning of each day. So the attendees will be able to stand up and say, you know, like, I want to talk about using art for activism, or I want to talk about outreach to restaurants, or some other topic like that. And then they get to go up and put it on the agenda themselves and lead that discussion in that period of the day. So it really empowers people to bring their own ideas, to bring their own passions to the event, rather than just sitting there and listening to a bunch of talking heads.
So from what I saw from the schedule that's posted up on the website, it's 9 till 5 p.m. each day, I believe. And as you said, there's a speaker at the beginning, speaker at the end, and then I believe the rest of the sessions entail this open agenda that's set up at the beginning of the day. So I think are they 45-minute sessions or an hour sessions? Is that how it works?
Yeah, around about an hour or so. I think the morning one is a little longer and the afternoon ones are a little shorter since people tend to fall asleep in the afternoon.
So based on, I guess, our conference from 2 years ago, can you maybe just give us some ideas of what kinds of breakout session topics we might expect to engage in?
Yeah, last year, a few that caught my eye were we had art and literature's role in animal advocacy, which was kind of exciting. So everybody who was interested in art went to that one. How to effectively communicate with others, which was a topic that came up a lot. Advocacy in the workplace was a fun one.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one group was talking about changing municipal bylaws. I know that there was also some people got together and discussed campaign ideas for an anti-fur demonstration to happen during the Olympics in 2010. So that was fun. So that was actual organizing that happened at the event. Pretty cool.
And would you say this event is for hardcore vegans like some of us are, or is it for people who just, you know, from anywhere? I want to get an idea of who the event is being opened up to and who's, like, encouraged to come. Because I know last time when we did the event, we really wanted to bring people from different types of animal rescue organizations, the dogs and cats, the rabbit rescue, just bring them all together because really what it's all about is the animals and not just about, factory-farmed animals and veganism.
Yeah, it's true. This is about animal advocacy. So anyone who is working for animals is invited to come, and this is an event for you. It's not just an event for vegans or people working to stop factory farming or people working for farm animals or food issues, but anyone working for animals, be it wildlife, ocean life, farmed animals, or dogs and cats.
So at this year's conference, there are going to be four keynote speaker addresses by four notable animal advocates. Can you tell us about who will be speaking and what they will be speaking about?
Yeah, this is exciting. Last year we didn't have speakers, but this year we decided to open up the event a little bit. So our opening talk on Saturday will be by Camille Labchuk. She's a law student, an activist based in Toronto. She has worked for the Federal Green Party, and she's also worked with the Humane Society International. She's documented the commercial seal kill on the east coast of Canada, and she's worked in a bunch of other campaigns as well. And she's also a board member of Lawyers for Animal Welfare, which is Canada's only animal law-focused organization. So she's going to be talking about using or making Canadian animal rights more political, getting us more involved in politics, which will be fun.
I like that because we're here in Canada and we don't get a lot of, I guess we just don't get a lot of discussion and education on Canadian issues as they pertain to animals. Next up you have Rob Laidlaw. Can you speak about him?
Rob Laidlaw is the founder and executive director of ZooCheck Canada. So he's been working for many years on wildlife and captive animal issues. He's also a author of children's books. So he'll be talking, the topic of his talk is Being Effective for Animals, A Perspective on Pushing for Change.
I actually saw one of his books last week at Carmivore. I was surprised. I'm like, oh, it's a children's book. I wasn't expecting that. That's cool. Yeah. And Leslie Fox.
Yeah, Leslie is she's currently the executive director of Fur Bearers, Vancouver-based organization. So she's our local activist who will be at the event doing a talk. She is going to speak about her personal experiences as an advocate for animals, since she's done a lot of work she runs a dissection campaign.
Frogs are cool.
Frogs are cool, yep. Mm-hmm. A great website and resources for our students. And she's also on the board of Earth Save Canada. So she's got a range of experiences to draw from.
And she's a great speaker, too.
Yeah, she is. And the closing talk on Sunday will be by Sarah Kramer, who is a famous cookbook author.
And a vegan superstar.
She is, and from Victoria. And she'll be closing with a fun and camaraderie-building game show.
Cool.
And the game show is called Canada's Next Top Vegan.
Nice. Yeah. So the registration fee for the camp is very affordable at $15 for the whole weekend. Can you please give us some info quickly on where the event's taking place and how one can register for the event?
Yeah, the event will be at a location called The Hive, which is on West Hastings near Victory Square. So it's basically Hastings and Cambie. It is $15 for the weekend. We have a low-income pay-what-you-can rate available as well. To register, people can go to animaladvocacycamp.ca, and there's a link there to register, and both of those ticket options are available there.
Thank you so much, Glenn, for coming on the show today to tell us about the Animal Advocacy Camp coming up on February 25th and 26th in Vancouver. For more information on this event and to register, please visit www.animaladvocacycamp.ca. Take care, Glenn.
Thanks.
You're listening to 102.7 FM CFRO, the Animal Voices radio show, broadcasting from East Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And I have some animal and compassionate living headlines for you here today. The U.S. game show The Price is Right gave away a trip to the Calgary Stampede on Wednesday as part of a Western-themed showcase of prizes that included Alberta-made cowboy boots and a Toyota pickup truck.
Disgusting.
But, yeah. Of course, former talk show or host of The Price is Right, Bob Barker, he's a prominent animal rights activist, and he's calling the prize utterly disgusting. He says, the Calgary Stampede is just an egregious example of inhumane treatment for animals. If I had been there, it would never in the world have happened.
I have to say the one good outcome of this story is that it's a story in the media. When is ever a prize that was given away on The Price is Right making all these national headlines, right?
Yeah.
Everyone knows that Bob Barker is a very large animal advocate, and he always, you know, gave his message of spaying and neutering dogs and cats at the end of his show and that. Yeah. And so, of course, this is going to come out. So yeah. The rodeo is happening anyways, right? And to get the bad PR that it is, I think really puts it in the spotlight and makes people think about it.
Yeah, Bob Barker's really good at bringing issues to the spotlight
because he has that power.
He's a part of the sort of North American consciousness. We all watched Price is Right
people
growing up, and we know who he is. So.
And he said it would have never happened when he was there, which is really interesting.
And just to give light to the other side, I guess. An official with the Calgary Stampede said a lot of progress has been made in the area of animal safety. Doug Fraser said, we're proud of our animal care and the way we treat animals. We're very proud of the way we've advanced our animal care. Two horses died in the Stampede's chuck wagon race in 2011, down from six in 2010. One of the recent deaths resulted in a record fine from Chuck Wagon Safety Commission. There's a poll right now on cbc.ca. Should The Price is Right continue to offer trips to the Calgary Stampede? Over 2,000 people responded. 54% said yes, 43% said no, 3% said I'm not sure. So get on there and give your opinion if you feel strongly about this.
Once again, it's good, I think, just to get this out for discussion on CBC. That's wonderful.
Definitely. A couple other stories here. In an undercover investigation, HSUS, that's the Humane Society of the United States, has discovered cruelty at two of the nation's top pork suppliers. And afterwards, one of the major suppliers in the U.S. made an important commitment. The Humane Society of the U.S. filed complaints against two of the largest pork suppliers in the U.S. following an undercover investigation that revealed the abuse of pigs. The animal welfare organization infiltrated two Oklahoma facilities owned by Seaboard Foods and Prestige Farms, the nation's third and fifth largest pork producers, respectively. They discovered lame and diseased pigs, denied veterinary care, distressed and suffering pigs confined within tiny gestation crates, and piglets being castrated without anesthetic. After that, actually just yesterday, no, this morning it was announced on Veg News that Fortune 500 meat producer Hormel Foods, which is the producer of Spam and other brands, announced this week it will be phasing out the use of gestation crates at all its facilities by 2017. There's a petition on the Humane Society of the U.S.'s site, urge pork companies to treat pigs better, if you care about that issue. And if you want to see the video of what they uncovered, it's called Walmart Pig Supplier Exposed. And just in Canada news, I did want to mention that Prime Minister Stephen Harper held a media event yesterday in Ottawa to order his Conservative government's support for the bloody massacre known as the Canadian Seal Hunt. This was reported on the Georgia Strait. Harper said in the release, our government is firmly committed to defending the legitimate economic activities of Canadians. Canada's sealing industry sustains thousands of northern and east coast jobs and the traditional way of life of a number of Aboriginal groups in our country. Our government will continue to vigorously defend this humane and highly regulated industry and seek new international markets for Canadian seal products, including China.
I wonder how he feels. I don't know how someone can just wake up every day and live a life that's built on spewing out lies. And I wish we had more time to talk about that. But we have talked about this issue at length on the show before.
It is a dying industry.
That's what Paul Watson said last week. So anyways, we should probably do another feature on it coming up this year if, in fact, the government is promoting it.
Agreed.
Today's feature interview is with the Healthy Voyager, Carolyn Scott Hamilton. Carolyn is the executive producer, creator, host, and writer of the Healthy Voyager web series and radio show, website, blog, brand, and social network. A nutritionist, chef, author, filmmaking, screenwriting, traveling, singing, dancing, fun-loving, healthy, and green-living wife, Carolyn, the Healthy Voyager, aims to help people live well one veggie at a time. Carolyn is here with us today to talk to us about the work she does to promote healthy plant-based living and to give us tips and advice on compassionate vegetarian traveling. Hello, Carolyn, and welcome to the Animal Voices radio show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it's nice to hear your voice. I have actually been listening to a lot of your podcasts lately, so I kind of knew what you would sound like. So can you tell us about what the Healthy Voyager brand is all about? You seem to be doing a lot of everything. You have a web TV series, a radio show, you blog, you do travel tours. How would you describe what it is that you have to offer as the Healthy Voyager?
Right now it's kind of snowballed into a big healthy and green living brand. But when I first started in 2005, it was just an idea because I've been vegan since 99 and traveled quite a bit and was kind of noticing that it was tough, and I figured I wasn't the only person that was going through it, be it a vegan or a vegetarian or a gluten-free person or a diabetic for that matter. So I thought, you know, if I started blogging and putting out, you know, kind of lists of places that I'd eaten or tips and tricks on how to get around, you know, certain places, that that it would kind of grow, and there was definitely a market for that. So I started the blog, and then I started the travel show, and now it's everything with, you know, the travel show is still the flagship, but now we have recipes and green living tips and whole living stuff, you know, like health articles and giveaways, and so basically, it's kind of your one-stop shop for everything healthy and green living. Obviously, it's all plant-based and vegan, and it's just a fun place to get some neat information.
So please tell us about your love for traveling and your progression in becoming an expert on traveling as a vegan. How do you think that being a vegan either complements and enhances or inhibits your ability to travel far and wide across the world?
Well, early on, it felt like it may have inhibited some travel, but now I think it's much more fun because that way I really get to know the cultures and get to know some locals and really find the neat hidden gems in an area or a city or a country and really explore new things that I probably wouldn't have not being vegan. Because if you're not vegan or vegetarian, you're just going to eat wherever. And nine times out of ten, you're not really going to kind of get in there and with the people and kind of absorb stuff. So it's sure there are times where it feels challenging, but overall, I think it's much more fun. And I know I'm being healthy, and I can still enjoy being out in the world without, you know, coming back and being like, oh, I feel so gross and fat or unhealthy or, you know, bad to the animals or, you know, anything like that. So I come and go with a clear conscience and happier for it.
And I think, too, that just being open-minded about learning the local culture's food, in that a lot of ethnic food is actually vegetarian already, right? Would you say that?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly, yeah. For the most part, you know, there are certain places that aren't meat-based, but they have a lot of dairy, but they really showcase vegetables and grains, unlike here in the States. so it is a lot of fun, and there's spices and flavors that we don't have here, and it is really interesting. You get to try some fantastic vegetables and fruit that aren't popular here, and it's just a lot of fun to try new things and know that, you know, it's still vegan, and I definitely found that out in Kenya, and I can talk more about that later, but I thought I was not going to be able to eat there, and lo and behold, the food was fantastic. They use so many types of legumes and vegetables and fruit, and their juices are delicious, and I was really blown away with the variety there.
Well, yeah, that's what I was curious about knowing, is that you, you're a chef, you're a nutritionist, you know about food, but surely you haven't, you hadn't tried all, I mean, you travel a lot, and just from reading your book, I can tell that you know about a lot about different cuisines. I'm curious to know, just like certain places that you've been to, as you said, Kenya, you can talk about that now, just learning about and being perhaps surprised about what you were to find there.
Yeah, that was one of the most surprising places, because I just imagined, and I was, and I stayed for 10 days in the African bush, and I thought, oh my gosh, they're just going to serve zebra and giraffe, and what am I going to eat? So I packed, I packed my suitcase full of like Luna bars and protein powders and things to put in my water so I wouldn't get sick, and it all came back with me. I didn't use any of it. Maybe I had a few bars like in my backpack when I was out, but I ate so well. The resort that we stayed at, it caters to, obviously, international travelers. And, in fact, a lot of Indian travelers visit that location, so they really cater to vegetarians. Every day there was, like, a buffet-type meal, and one entire section was labeled, this is vegetarian, this is vegan, this is vegetarian. And it was, like, all these delicious, like, bean stews.
Fantastic.
And sauteed vegetables. And it was really beautiful, the fruit and the fresh juices. And I just ate so well there. And it wasn't, you know, vegan junk food. It was really just whole plant-based foods. And it was really surprising. I really fell in love with the food there and the people. And just the area was gorgeous. So, definitely surprising.
Surely some places in the world are easier to travel and eat in as a vegetarian or vegan. Would you say that some of, what would you say are some of the best places in the world that you've encountered for vegetarian or vegan traveling, the vegan meccas of the world, if you will?
Well, I'm finding more and more that there are so many very vegan places. Like, I would say Portland, Oregon is probably the vegan mecca. Every single restaurant has some sort of vegan option. And I would probably say that the vegan restaurants maybe outnumber the regular restaurants. It's pretty fantastic. Everything there is green and vegan and eco, and it's such a great place for that. Seattle is another great place. New York, San Francisco, London, which I know London used to get a bad rap for having terrible food, but I have to say they have some really delicious stuff. It's getting better and better. But I'm noticing in my travels that the places that aren't necessarily vegan-y, like Portland, that the places that are kind of starting out and trying to offer more vegan stuff have much healthier options than I would say the vegan meccas. Because the vegan meccas, a lot of them are, you know, vegan junk food, vegan comfort food, which is all fine and good. But the places that are just kind of trying it out, they really offer a lot of delicious dishes that are really based around real vegetables and grains and the flavors. I noticed that recently in Miami, that they're kind of starting out and kind of getting on the scene, but every place that I went to was really healthy, and they did a lot of great creative stuff with actual vegetables and not relying on the vegan meats or the vegan cheeses, which I thought was pretty neat.
That's great to know. So our control room operator trainee, Morgan, who's here sitting beside me, and I, we're traveling to India next week for the first time ever. And luckily we'll be on a vegan tour where we won't have to worry about the food most of the time. But what are some tips you can offer us for veg eating in India? From what I know, 30% of the country's population is lacto-vegetarian, so it's a good place to go to get veggie food. But what should we know being first-time travelers to India?
Yeah, for sure. Traveling as a vegetarian in India is a dream. If you're vegan, you have to be a little more leery, just because they do tend to use ghee, which is clarified butter, some cheese, and, you know, some dairy. So you just have to be a little bit aware of that. But as a vegetarian, they are fantastic. There's so many great things. Just their beans and their vegetables and even their naan. It's really delicious, and you'll have a lot of fun as a vegetarian. But you may want to just make sure every time you're somewhere to maybe perhaps learn some of the phrases. For the most part, they speak English. I mean, they were occupied by England for many years. But just in case, you know, just to make sure, always ask beforehand, does this have ghee in it? Does this have butter? Does this have cheese? Just to kind of be a little safe.
Yeah, and from what I actually have read is it'll say on the restaurant vegetarian, like on the sign outside, if they can do vegetarian. I would assume they all can. Every Indian restaurant that I've been to here has vegetarian options.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I'm sure that there are some there that might serve, you know, lamb or chicken or something like that. There may be some places that really feature that heavily, but I would say depending on the areas that you're in, especially the more tourist-heavy areas, that there's no reason to not find vegetarian options where you're at.
So we've talked about just being able to travel the world. It's a fantastic opportunity to be able to discover all the delicious different vegan cuisines and just cuisines in general in other places around the world. And being, you seem to be a food lover to me, being that you wrote a cookbook. So, you know, and you spoke about Kenya. I'm curious to know about maybe any unusual culinary discoveries around the world that you have discovered in plant-based eating.
Yeah, I mean, everyone has their different styles, techniques, foods. I mean, obviously, you know, depending on regions, there are certain things that aren't available. But in my travels and as well as in my research and in writing the cookbook, because it's an international cookbook, I wanted to stay true to the techniques of the original and traditional folk recipes, you know, of those particular regions. So I learned a lot about how these dishes came to be, and it was really interesting. Like one of my favorite stories is in the Danish section in the chapter of the book. There's a recipe called æbleskivers, and æbleskivers are like little, I wouldn't say they're donut holes, but they're like pancakes that are filled with either, you know, applesauce or jelly or even chocolate if you want. And they came to be because the Vikings, they would go out and fight. And when they'd come back to their camp, you know, they traveled very light. All they had were their metal helmets and their metal shields. And they were obviously all dinged up and had a lot of dents. So they would use their metal shields to cook because, you know, obviously they're, you know, conducting heat. And the pancake batter would go into the little divots and create these little pancake balls. So little things like that I learned were really just neat, how things came to be either by mistake or kind of by design. And it's fun to kind of hear those stories and learn about, you know, food and where it came from.
So on the subject of your new cookbook, The Healthy Voyagers Global Kitchen, it features 150 plant-based recipes from around the world. And I am hugely impressed at the variety of different recipes that this book features. I mean, you're featuring food from countries around the world that, number one, I wouldn't expect them to have much plant-based. And number two, I wouldn't even, like, you don't really see recipes from these countries featured usually in international cookbooks. So these recipes, are they all a result of the traveling that you've been doing and the sampling of so many different authentic ethnic dishes?
Yeah, it's definitely a combination of both, you know, places that I've been to, things that really kind of stood out for me in my travels, other things that I did experience or things that I wanted to but couldn't because they weren't vegan and I wanted to make them vegan, and things that I grew up with. And I'm half Colombian, half French, so I grew up with a lot of different ethnic foods. So it's a big combination. And then, of course, there were places that I had not been to yet that I really wanted to explore the veganizing of their foods. Like you mentioned, there are things in there that people normally wouldn't see in a cookbook, like Russian recipes or, you know, Swiss recipes. And I thought it was a lot of fun to kind of bring forward some of those traditional dishes from those areas because they were really neat. And what a fun way to try foods from there, whether you get to go there or not. So it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I really appreciate how accurate the veganizations of the recipes seem, because from I have South American and European roots as well, and just seeing recipes that I grew up with in my household and seeing like, yeah, that's exactly how my mom would make it, except that you're using seitan instead, which is great. So I really like that. What are some of your favorites from the book, your favorite recipes?
I think it's a combination of a lot of the Latin American recipes, of course, things that I grew up with that that I love, and then the funky stuff like the Russian dishes or some of the Danish dishes, things that I have not been able to try as a vegan, and it was fun to create them and say, hey, now I know what it's like to eat an Ebbelsheber or a Frikadeller or a Ziad. It was a lot of fun. So it's kind of the more off-the-wall recipes are great, and then, of course, the things that remind me of my childhood in the Latin American recipes.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to making some of those myself just because I haven't had some of these dishes for so long. I'm curious to know, in all of your traveling, what your observations and experiences have been like in learning about the relationships that people in different societies have with animals. Like in India, for example, cows are revered and they walk freely around in the streets. What have your observations been of the human-animal relationships in different places? And do you see a distinct difference in the way that people in other societies connect with or treat animals than we do here in North America? And I guess that depends also on the species of animals as well.
Right. Absolutely. Here in the States, we're really shielded from that. You don't see animals in the streets. I mean, they don't even call cows. They call them beef. You know, so here it's very shielded. But in other countries, it's very out in the open. You know, in South America and a lot of, like, not the metropolitan areas, but definitely in, like, the smaller pueblos and places, you do see animals walking through. You see chickens, you see cows, and it's just kind of part of what it is. And it's not a horrible secret, I guess, like it is here.
Yeah.
And when I was in Kenya, in the African bush, I spent a lot of time with the Maasai Mara tribe. And they're nomadic, and because of where they live, it's very arid and dry, and they can't really grow vegetables. So their diet, and this sounds so disgusting, but their diet literally consists of milk, cow blood, and beef, because that's the only thing that they have available to them, and that's been what's available to them for thousands and thousands of years. They have, you know, very little water, and that's what they sustain. But what I did notice is, they love their cows, and the cows live with them for years. And I met a young tribesman who fought a lion because it was going to kill his cow that he loved. So it was a funky relationship in that you love this animal that you are eventually going to have to slaughter to sustain yourself.
And they do
it. They love their animal, but. I didn't watch the ceremony, but I know that they actually do a ceremony before they have to kill their animal to sustain themselves for, who knows, months at a time. But there was something kind of nice to know that they cared about that animal, and it wasn't this horrible slaughterhouse kind of mentality of it's just such an expendable animal. But so as weird as it was to me, I mean, it's not my culture. It's how they've been for thousands of years. So I did find that extremely interesting.
And I bet they would find the way that we just consume meat like crazy here, but keep it all hidden. I bet they would find that crazy, wouldn't they?
Oh, terribly crazy. I mean, these people, they live on cornmeal and then the milk and water. And then some people know how to grow a few vegetables, but it's very, very limited. But they don't eat the way that we do, you know. They don't eat three times a day, and they're walking all the time. So it's just a very different mentality, and just the customs are very different than what we would perceive.
I'd like to talk about trips and travel advice that you can give to the compassionate voyager who doesn't want to consume or use animals in their travels. To start, can you give us some tips on planning ahead to know where to go to eat and get food from when you're on your journey?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I always advocate that whenever you're staying somewhere, to do your best to get either a kitchenette or some place where you can store some food, and really hit up the local market, be it here in the States or when you're traveling abroad, to get to know your local farmer's market or your local grocer and really kind of stock up. So then that way, not only are you saving money from dining out all the time, you're saving time because you can eat in your room before you leave. And you can obviously make sure you know that you're eating vegan or vegetarian and healthier. So, you know, you can get fruit and vegetables, which are always an easy snack to keep in your backpack or have before you leave. But when you can't do that, again, like at airports or when you're going to be traveling, kind of know before you go, check what terminal you're going to be flying in and out of. And there's always a listing of the eateries that are available there. Mm-hmm. So kind of get to know what's available. And if you can't pack your own food, definitely make the choice based on, you know, where you're going to be. I always pack my own food. again, to save money because airport food is crazy expensive and it's crazy gross. So I always pack like a sandwich and a couple bars. I always bring like a green powder that I love to put in my water, and I always carry my own glass bottle with me through security, and then I fill it up at the airport so I don't have to buy a $10 water. And I put my green powder in it, which is about 6 servings of vegetables per packet. So if you know you're not going to be able to eat a really healthy salad or be kind of healthy, at least you're getting it that way, and then I have like a sandwich for the plane. So kind of know before you go and pack some stuff, and don't be shy. Pack what you need just to kind of keep yourself healthy throughout the trip.
Yeah, I always think it's important to pack backups. I always have like an extra food bag, actually, just when I go on the plane, because you never know. Now, I know you have some good tips for cooking in your hotel room with limited resources, which can be a great way to save money as well. Can you share some of these tips with us, please?
Oh, yeah. One of my favorites is using the hotel room coffee pot. Definitely clean it out well before you use it. But it's a great place to heat up soups. I always bring like miso packets, like the powdered miso. And with hot water, you've got instant miso soup for breakfast or dinner. You can cook oatmeal in there. You can heat up leftovers from a dinner the night before. So even if you don't have a refrigerator in the room, because some have mini fridges, you can use the ice bucket and keep your food kind of, you know, preserved over the ice bucket. So use what you have in there. You can use the ice bucket to toss a salad. You can mix things. Like, I've made hummus in one of those. You just get some chickpeas from the store and some garlic, and then you can make hummus and you can get chips. So it's a great way, again, to save money and make sure that you're eating healthy, especially in a place that may not be very vegetarian friendly. There's all kinds of neat tricks you can use in your hotel room to kind of eat healthy and vegan.
Yeah, I always try to get a room that has a fridge and microwave, but at the very least a mm-hmm. fridge. And then, you know, I go to the store and buy all my vegan treats because I'm on vacation. So, mm-hmm. and then use that definitely for a backup, because there are, you know, sometimes you're in places. Well, Hawaii, for one place, it's easy to get a hotel room with a kitchenette, and the food in restaurants is really expensive there. So that's one place where I do that. Lastly, with regards to traveling as a vegan or vegetarian, you actually offer your own Healthy Voyager tours where you travel to different places all over the world and you will accommodate plant-based diets, which I'm very curious to know more about. So can you tell us more about this, please?
Yeah, we have tours that kind of go to the cool destinations around the world that vegans and other people on special diets tend to not visit because they are afraid of what they can and can't eat there. So we're offering exotic destinations like Machu Picchu, Kenya. India is an easy one, but that's a fun one. Mm-hmm. We're doing Egypt, we're doing Greece, we're doing Belize, Costa Rica. Next year we're going to do a cruise to the Antarctic. We're going to do Greece and Italy. So what's great about it is you go on the trip, the meals are, whether they're included or not, everything's always vegan. We have either private chefs, depending on where we're staying, because we do move around on the trip, private chefs that cook vegan, or we have listings of places that know that we're in town and cater to vegans and vegetarians or can accommodate. So that way, regardless of your dietary restrictions, you can still go on this awesome adventure and not worry about what you're eating. And a lot of the times, the food is just fantastic. So we take trips from people that are 10 to 30 in the group. So you can come on your own, you can come with a friend, and everything's included outside of the airfare. Great locations. We get tour guides. We get to see the neatest stuff around the world without worrying about what you're going to eat.
That sounds fantastic. I was actually looking at your upcoming Egypt tour. That's somewhere where I want to go, and it looks like a lot of fun, and it looks like it's really well organized. So being that we're going on, this is my first tour that I'm going on next week to India, and I actually like the idea of touring where someone's taking care of you and you don't have to worry about your food, because mm-hmm. it just takes a lot of the planning off your plate, right? So literally, and being that you have these plant-based tours as well, where you can just be a vegan, that's excellent, and it's really a dream come true. So I'm curious to know how, I mean, you must get a lot of response from people like us who just are not typical eaters. And it's really, it just sounds like a really fun way to travel as well. So I'm looking forward to the tour part of it. Thank you, Carolyn, for coming on the show today to talk to us about compassionate vegetarian traveling and to find out about Carolyn and everything she offers in compassionate plant-based living as a healthy voyager. You can visit her website. It's www.healthyvoyager.com. Take care and happy travels this year.
Thank you so much. Take care.
That wraps it up today for another inspiring and illuminating episode of Animal Voices on CFRO Vancouver Cooperative Radio on 102.7 FM, broadcasting from unceded Coast Salish territory, otherwise known as Vancouver, Canada. If you want to learn about the guests we featured today or any of our past guests, our website has loads of links for you. It's animalvoices.org. You'll find archives of all our past shows and information on how to subscribe to our podcast. If you have feedback, please contact us by email, radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. Please keep in touch with us with social networking. We want to be your friend. Facebook is Animal Voices Vancouver, and Twitter, Animal Voices YVR. We'll let you know about upcoming shows so you can stay tuned. Of course, Co-op Radio is 100% volunteer-run, listener-supported radio, and we need your memberships and your help. Co-opradio.org to find out more about membership and how to get involved with that. Next week, join dedicated vegan and animal activist Robin Piquel and I, Alyssa Ray, as we host a veritable love fest in honor of and as an antidote to the hyper-commercialized and often loneliness-inducing Valentine's Day.
Aww. You're not going to be lonely.
No, not at all. But just the way that it's commonly touted that
it could be.
Everyone has to be in a relationship with one person, and if you're not, blah, blah, blah.
Anyway,
love your body, love each other, love the earth, love animals. Let's explore the concept and power of love with a capital L. We'll discuss effective nonviolent action and communication and heart-centered sustainable activism. We'll feature a reputable yoga teacher who will shed light on the spiritual basis of animal rights and offer insight on aligning our bodies, minds, and spirit with our highest values. We'll talk about ahimsa, the principle of non-harming, metta, loving-kindness, and compassion. Join us for our love-in next week.
Sounds fantastic.
We'll leave you with a song called Traveling Forever by Will.i.am in honor of the Global Voyager interview today. Thanks so much for listening, and remember, be kind to the animals.
I've been around the world in a pouring rain, feeling out of place, really feeling strange. Take me to a place where they know my name, 'cause I ain't met nobody that looks the same. I'm a fish out of water, lying out of the jungle.
Yeah, fish out of water, lying out of the jungle.
I need my peoples, take me to my peoples.
Daddy got drunk on fever, show him some love, show him love.
There's someone, there's someone to relate to.
To relate to
relate.
feels like I'm in heaven. Feels like I'm in heaven.